Yeah, morning, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Digest with Jimmy Disu, brought to you by Amstel Malta. Amstel Malta. Right. Today, I was going to do a solo run, then I got a call from my good friend Osa. He will be in the studio any minute from now. So what he's going to do is we'll just look at issues of the day, you know, have a nice wrap about what's going on and take your calls and stuff like that. The first first thing I need to do today is to dedicate today's program to the memory of Mr. Tony Uranta. Tony Uranta was an activist. I got to know that he was even the Secretary General of PANDEF. Tony Uranta to me is not an activist. Tony Uranta to me is a friend that I've known way back from school, back in the days in Methodist Boys High School. You know, Tony was a year ahead of me. I think he was in the 1970 set, and I was in 71 set. So the stories that are making the rounds that Tony is 57 is not true. You got the age wrong. If anything at all, maybe he was born. He couldn't even have been born in 57. Very unlikely. I mean, I was born 55. I mean, so you need to get your facts right on that. Tony definitely is not a 57-year-old man. Not by any chance. Then it means that when he was in Methodist High School, he was in the womb. Okay? So get that straight. Now, Tony, it's a pity, like I said this morning at 7:30, with Wemimo, that I wasn't able to convince him to put the story of his life to paper, or at least to give me the permission to do so. I had always wanted to do a story with Tony on his story, his own story, to serve as an inspiration to the younger ones about how to go through the highs and lows of life. All of us have highs and lows. Some are visible, some are not. For those of us who are close to Tony, it was quite visible. With that, so I don't want to go into details. I'm hoping that when all this is over, maybe his family might allow one to do that. But I've known Tony all my life. I've seen him through all kinds of situations. That man that left strong man. What I can tell you, though, is that he was in hospital for, even when he wasn't in hospital, he had suffered, must have had about 3 or 4 strokes. And it was surgery after surgery, stroke after stroke. Tony kept going on. You know, he put up what I would call a good fight. At the end of the day, before he left, he gave a good account for himself. In the Christian world, I know at some point Tony was born again, because everything you said, apart from what he would say, was always shalom, shalom, shalom. And that is peace, peace, peace. The bit I can remember about Tony was that, of course, he went to the Methodist Boys High School. He went to International School Ibadan, which we lovingly called ISI back in the day. Now, back in the day, schools were very distinct. There were grade A schools, grade B schools, and they were like top of the whatever. Then there were others, and of course, there were what we called unapproved school way back then, unapproved schools in Lagos. Lagos was a small place, but not true. So Tony finished in Methodist Boys High School, I think in 70. He must have proceeded 71 to ISI. Then ISI was a school of the elite. There are no two ways about it. It was a school of the elite. And what it's called is what it was. You had children from all nationalities, you know, attending that school. Those were the days when you had lecturers in UI. Lecturers, we had British lecturers, Scottish, I can't remember if you had Chinese. But those were the days when people came to Nigeria to work. It's difficult for you to, not to work, not all these jagwajantis work you are seeing, supermarket, that's not what I'm saying. They came, you'd have a professor, you know, from some university somewhere in Scotland, would come, and I remember when I was in University of Benin, there was a lecturer in the Department of Engineering. I've forgotten, he's a very popular lecturer then. He came in from the UK. He was in UniBen then. I think it was Ubumudia that brought him. And there was a bus. In University of Benin then, we had about 16 buses that were running between the three campuses till 12 midnight, free of charge. You know, there was a route from Ugbowo through Ago all the way to Yaro, from Yaro to from Ekenwa to Yaro to Bowo and back. The buses just kept going around. But there was this particular bus that was attached to engineering department. So one day the lecturer got in, Scottish man, and he said, this bus is dry. So he went and brought, in those days, we didn't call them cassettes, we called them cartridges. He now put this cartridge of classical music. So he put the cartridge in and it was for boys we don't correct. They go lecture in the morning. So it was said that somebody said, who put this kind of Leventis music? Because when you went to supermarkets in those days, they play some classical music. Come on, this classical music, this Leventis music. And then I think the driver from under his seat brought one. He said, make I put this one. They say, yeah, wait till they inside. He put it in. It was Fela's Nakpoi. And that's how the boss got the appellation Nakpoi till I left the university. So back to, that's the story of ISI. You did have lecturers. So Tony went to ISI. From ISI, he just went next door within the campus. He went to University of Ibadan. At a very young age, Tony was a member of the MPN. He was a member of the MPN and he was a top member, not necessarily. First, let me tell you, Tony was, what word would I use? Tony was a go-getter. Tony Molati Banyifani, you know, I wish you are watching me on YouTube so you can see my expressions. You know, Tony is the kind of person like Jimmy, I like to kusim, he moved up, and I think at some point he was almost head of procurement in his 20s. Not PDP then, of the MPN back in the day, and Tony made money, man. I think he was the one who bought the cars. He was the procurement officer, I think, for the Southeast Zone. You know, but when I say sure, he made money, good money, man, made money. And then after that, there was a lull. You know what money does to a young man, all you young guys out there. That's why it is a pity Tony is not here to tell you his story, man. He had a lull, and sometime after that, from nowhere, he surfaced one day, there he was, fighting his way back, got married, became a very strong voice. Tony, in case dead people talk, I need to ask you whether you were the Cynthia White who was writing all those releases in those days for the activists. No, they weren't activists. And what were they called? The Rivers, what were they called? What was, sorry? You don't know? Well, good job. Anyway, those Sadi Dokubo, all of them, they were all his. So I want to know if he was the Cynthia White that was writing for the agitators then. Because Tony is highly intellectual. If you listen to his interviews on television, you know you're dealing with a very, very intelligent person. Extremely intelligent. But in between that, he rose again. And by the time I knew it, I was going to see Tony after so many years of his lull. If you wanted to see President Jonathan within 24 hours, one of the ways you could see it was going to Tony's place. He had the place in Amole. I think it's still there where he was. And then he became Secretary General of PANDEF and this and that. But he was an activist to the end. I think when he was in university, he was also, if he wasn't an activist, I know he was a member of the Buccaneers fraternity, which was the fallout of the Pirates confraternity way back then. Which reminds me, yes, I know, you are reminding me. I'm still going to tell you guys the story of my sojourn in the Pirates confraternity, which I still identify with till today. I have no whatever about that. And so that's Tony in a nutshell for you. And it's to his memory that I dedicate this program and subsequent programs like this, because I'm sure wherever he was, this is what I'm sure Tony will be saying to whoever is near him. So Tony spoke Yoruba. Forget that he's from. I didn't even know Tony was from South. When we were growing up, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. We didn't matter. When I remember my friends, loads of them that were Nosegbe, for example. I've never seen Nosegbe. Nosegbe is supposed to be, I think, is it from Rivers or whatever? Nosegbe, as far as I'm concerned, is an Obalindi boyfriend. I home all these people, Tony them, all of us. We're all romping around and having fun. You know, I didn't know until this activism came to. I'm not even too sure that when Tony started his activism for the Niger Delta, that you could give him a car to drive all the way to the place. I'm sure you'd have to stop and ask for direction. So may his soul rest in peace. He's done his own and gone. For me, Osa, good morning. For me, I'm distraught. In fact, my feelings are dead as I speak. How many people will I tell you that I've lost? I've said no more posting. My good friend Khadija told me this morning, nobody wants to be my friend because all my friends are dying one by one. Even Wemimo, you can see when I asked her the question just now and I wanted to tap her hand, she quickly removed it and jumped to the other side. Koribe, it's not like that. It's just a coincidence. It's the age that I am. I've lost Mrs. Okpo. I lost my son. What's his name now? Sonia. I lost my son in that one. That one, we are still begging Lagos State, please release his body. Eh? Let's have closure on this matter. I lost Mrs. Okpo. I lost Shola. Shola Shwemimo. Eh? My sister, we all grew up together. She used to be with the police. I think she died with the rank of commissioner of police. We've lost so many people that I'm sure if it wasn't for COVID, I spent half my time. Very influential. Morning, Osa.
Morning, sir.
First of all, the photograph you sent me this morning of the Oba and his
son.
Is that his first son?
That's his first son. That's the crown prince.
You are from Benin, Abi?
Yes.
I thought that there was something that said that the crown prince wouldn't set eyes on the Oba. And that's why they kept him in Edaikin. That's we're talking about Benin now.
That Edaikin thing, it's not as if you go there, there's nobody there.
Eh.
So that thing happens.
That's
when,
what I was told.
No, that thing happens when you want to ascend the throne.
After the father is dead.
Eh? When you want to ascend the throne.
Yes.
So you have to go to Edaikin. You have to go to Uselu.
Uselu, yes.
That's how you have the palace. So you stay there. That's how you do the rites.
Why? I've always had this impression.
If you pass there, there's nobody. You remember? It was when the last the Oba passed away.
Yes.
They started doing some renovations there. You know, if you look at it, it's like a thick forest, as if it's a mighty thick forest.
I mean, I've not been there before.
No, when you drive on the express, you see it.
I know, I don't look in that direction. You know,
so you now move there.
My first sojourn in Benin, we do apologies. My first sojourn in Benin was when people were completely ignorant of what was going on in the then Midwest.
Mm.
My mother, God bless her, Ayoka, where she is, her hands was on her chest when I insisted I was going to go to Benin. Ha, Egbami. They said that, sorry to say, the witch is flying. So when I finally got to Benin, it was like a mind your own business situation. On that note, morning. Did you ever hear of Tony Oranta?
Yes, no, never.
You knew him.
Yes, no, I don't know him personally, but I know.
You know of him. Like I said before, you came in. I went to school with him. We were in school together.
I didn't know he was that old.
I don't know. I was surprised when I heard somebody said Tony is 57. Tony cannot be 57.
Maybe he was 67. I think they.
He must have been 67. The, yes, they dropped off 10 years. And Tony, he definitely is not. We knew him. I was his classmate in Methodist Boys High School. Quite unlike what you have in the political scene, and you have people that just in name, age, next of kin, this and that. One of the things I thought we'd discuss this morning a little bit is, of course, Lai Mohammed, but you will be kind to him. I know you are very angry, but you will be kind to him. The man has been through bashing, you know, the whole of yesterday. I think what he did lacked discretion. I think he was rude to the panel. I think it was premature. He didn't, we don't have an official report. I think all those things. And then, of course, today, Ulisa lent his voice to all that. Everybody's lending their voice. Ironically, I haven't seen, I don't say there is none, but I haven't seen one notable person come out in support of what he did, even the president, because the president is reported to have said that let us wait and see the report from the states before we act. So what do you think went down there?
I think Lai was just trying to be defensive. So if the president had made made a statement. And that statement was made in the presence of, if I get it right, the presence of the Secretary of State.
Yes.
Last week when he came visiting in the villa.
Mm.
And when they were talking about human rights abuses and stuff like that,
mm.
and the President gave his remarks back to him and said, you know, there's a process, we'll wait for the outcome, you know, things like that. So I think we'll have ended there. So even if Lai Mohammed was supposed to even organize a press conference or anything, just sit down and wait. When the report is out, then the government take their decisions, and then you can now pass it out.
You know, he apparently he is now made it an us versus them issue,
mm.
which is not. It's like the clock is trying to, the pendulum is trying to swing to the right. Mm. You want to force it to swing to the left. Is that the way people are governed?
You see, unfortunately, Lai Mohammed is a total disappointment in his position as a minister, and I don't even believe in that Ministry of Information.
Yes,
we are not in the Goebbels time of World War II when you're building propaganda. Mm. We don't need that in the modern world. Nowhere in the world you say Minister of Information. What information are you doing? Whether you come from the State House or it comes from the different spokesman of State Secretary.
I think what you really should have. He sold the idea to me and I've bought it ever since. That what we should have is one director, because what he said is even at variance with what Femi Adesina said.
So imagine, so who?
So who is he representing?
The principal. His principal said something else. Heading to the right, and you're heading to the left.
Who is his own principal? Is it the president or the federal government?
The president appointed him. So, and their decisions is, I think his sole work is to give out information from the administration.
Mm.
I think that's what you do. It's like an announcer. This is what we are doing. And you say this is the policy that we are doing, and we're trying to defend the policy that we are doing. I think that's what his duty is. So if they have not deliberated in the Federal Executive Council or any council to say, okay, this is the reports from the state, and we have collapsed them together, and this is the thing, and going forward, this is what we'll do. Compensation should be paid by blah, blah, blah to people.
Yes.
Apologies to be rendered for unfortunate incident that happened, blah, 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 miscommunication. So you can just move on and quietly and end discussion. Because this is the same Lai Mohammed, if I remember back, when you had the Chibok crisis then, the Chibok girls that came in, then he was in opposition, when he was on top of the rooftop, talking and shouting and saying all sorts of things. Then, when the likes of Doyo Okupe and Co were in CNN,
mm.
on CNN Live with Issa, with that lady, that Aisha Sisi or something, they were saying, how can they carry a bus? Just come. Even the president was saying, how true is it? It was not true.
Mm.
When Lai Mohammed was shouting that it was true, this, that, that's an APC state then. So that is the same position that Lai Mohammed is now in now, trying to deny something that happened. So if the government, it's not Amnesty International that set up the panel.
It's a Lagos State government.
It's a state Lagos State government and APC government, in which he is a part of this state government here. Whether we like it or not, Lai Mohammed is part of it, because at least his son is in the House of Assembly, so he's part of this government. So the government were the one that handpicked. And the SAN said, that's Ebun, Mr. Ebun, said that the governor called him personally and said they want to do, and tell him that it's a civic duty, that I need credible men and women to be part of it. And like everybody keeps talking about Joseph Obi as an upright justice.
Yes,
and so they did this thing and they sent it. Because you see, why that thing leaked because they know that it was a damning report. And if you hand over those papers to government to just take it and just drop it somewhere and it starts with Malory, and then that's how that matter will just end and just move on. So that's why some of them had their own copies.
Would the government have lost anything if, let's even assume, let's just play along this assumption that was a report. Would the federal government have lost anything by saying, for example, that, okay, with this report that we have, we now need to look further into this issue? Set your people. That would have been better.
It's a simple thing.
It's a simple thing.
If I were... Governor Sonwulu, I hope he maybe will listen to what this program is on. It's a simple thing. Look at the reports. Okay, the white paper is out. You do a state broadcast to these people of Lagos State. The unfortunate incident that happened that day, we're trying to protect lives and property, but unfortunately, it went out of hands, spiraled out of control.
Exactly.
And we apologize. I will beg apologize for this to happen. And this type of thing can never happen again. We're not saying that you have not have right to protest, which cannot happen again. the government has set aside XYZ to compensate.
That the families can come forward now.
Compensate the family to compensate them for the loss of life. We know no matter how much we pay, you cannot recover a life because we don't give life. And that's the end of the day. Everybody will clap and everybody just move on and move. We have a closure.
Exactly.
We move on.
Why did he opt? At some point, if you had a very discerning president, he'll almost be thinking of sabotage. That could this be done to embarrass me? You know, that's another way. If I were the president, I might look at it that because the simple solution is there.
You see what people like somebody said, what you tend to forget is that there was a day he made one statement. You are in power and it can never be forever.
No, it can't be.
So one morning you will leave power. After all, there were some people there in 16 years, they have left power now. They're in the streets now.
And some of them, even Second World War, are still answering questions
now. So today, people will make that petition to Hague and Co. for human rights abuses. They will come and carry you from here and take you there. And you see that there's an old age, you know, with your walking stick. They will put you there. And you will still serve the rest of your life in the foreign jail. Because whether we like it or not, we are in a global community where there's rule
and
order.
Yes, the world is
so,
one.
So and we are a treaty. We're a signatory to those treaties.
Okay, I need to take a break now. I'm a signatory to this one. It's the Daily Digest brought to you by Amstel Malta, which I'm sure would excite you.
Yes,
for reasons best known. Okay, thank you, Manuel. So we'll take a short break, and when we come back, Osa and I will continue, and then we'll take your calls and your reaction, so don't go away. Yes, you're welcome back to the Daily Digest with Jimmy D. So, Daily Digest is brought to you by Amstel Malta, and Osa is here as my guest. I'll take your calls 070-993-993-993 and the alternate line 01465-7190. Those who are supposed to use the alternate lines know themselves. Okay, it's a female line. All right, let me take my first caller. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning, sir. Who's calling?
I listened from your analysis with the lady earlier, and the truth is that our government really don't care about us, Makega Sasang. And the Lai Mohammed, I think he's an old story. I think he was employed for a reason, and he's doing that very well, and we all see it. What I would advise that if someone is listening is to ensure that he gives Lagosians the reason to see him as somebody who values life. Because for anybody to come out and say nobody died at the Lekki toll gate and continues to say it and defend it and use those words I can't describe from Lai Mohammed, it's absurd and it should not come up. Someone just like the man within the studio has ways he can approach this matter and ensure that he appeases mind. You can't pay for life, even if you pay a billion dollar compensation.
Yes.
You can't pay for a life. But he should find a way to ensure that he lets people know that he values life and
does not
play to the gallery with this issue. Because
we lost that. But that was a very matured contribution that we had right there. Anything to add? Nothing really.
No, nothing. It's just a simple thing. The deed has been done. So just for you to now just say
it speaks for itself.
Well, it has happened. So let's
let's have another one. Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Okay, Jimmy, good morning, sir.
Morning, how are you?
And the guest in the studio.
Good morning.
Morning.
I want to say Sanwo-Olu, for me, he has some human feelings, except those who are at the background pushing him. You know, look at what he did last year in the pandemic. The other one I want to say, can't he, Sanwo-Olu, consult someone like you, Uncle Jimmy? Because I listen to you all the time when you talk about government and good governance. You are not biased at all. You say it the way it is. Can't they consult people like you so that to better the lives of people he's governing?
Okay, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Consulting people like us is one thing, but the shoe that leans on his neck, if not taken off, he's not going to get far. I remember I got frustrated at some point here that I had to even call on his family to remember that he has a family name to protect. I think, and I still maintain, that both Sanwo-Olu and his deputy can run this state effectively. It is the knee on their neck, and that knee is a selfish knee. It is a knee of self-interest. If that knee is not taken off his neck, he is not going to go far. If he is not ready to walk away from the job and call people's bluff, he'll be picking up the can for something he's not fully responsible for. And this is what it is. There is no point. If you are going to give somebody advice or you are going to comment on something, if you can't say the truth, then just bloody well keep short. If the various interests, the top interests that lean on this gentleman, these knees keep propping up everywhere you look in the issue of Okada, who is stopping him from enforcing the law, the issue will crop up. In the issue of even in the House approval of the building that went down, who moved that? Who was the one who could have picked his phone to call to say, let this man go back to site? If you don't get that knee off this man's neck, there is very little he can do. Like the previous caller said, he showed a lot of promise in the handling of COVID and so on and so forth. He showed quite a lot of promise in that regard. But when you now have issues that are politically tainted, then he runs into trouble. That is the price we pay for electing one man and having another boss. And I hope that in 2023, it will be corrected. The time has come in this state, I repeat, when the truth has to be told. There is no, Osa, help me here. There is no point. If we are not going to tell the truth at my age, look, Tony is just gone. We were mates. There's going to be a party to celebrate him. It's a celebration of life. So for some of us, we must do what needs to be done before we cross over. I'm not going to face my ancestors and they'll be asking me questions. The gods have put you in a place where you can influence and talk to people. And this gift that we have is a gift of God. It should not be monetized, and you must never use it falsely. That is why I can boldly face even those who are very close friends of mine. Just this morning, I was lamenting about what happened my friend did in Ondo. He's my very good friend. He was my classmate. But hey, the truth has to be told. There is a larger responsibility to society. A lot of our elders are not picking up that responsibility. They keep beating about the bush. Bring an elite here now, he'll be dancing kokoma. Not be able to. The knee that leans on that man, who is the one, for example, the issue of Okada is very glaring. Okada is banned in one part of the country. These people now rush down to Lagos. Lagos becomes the dustbin. Look at the person riding the Okada. Look at the value of the Okada he's riding. You can't see a nexus. The man cannot even afford to buy a shirt on himself that he's wearing, but he's driving. So what is happening? Is one man's ambition getting in the way? These are the questions we need to ask ourselves. You know? I wonder what you think, Osa. Don't just say you agree with me. Let me know what you think.
it's a failure of governance across Nigeria. And
is it governance or a failure of interest?
Yes, failure. Well, you see, the issue here is, like I keep telling people, you see, Nigeria will not... Like myself and a few friends, we say there's no hope, because if you ask yourself, if you tell yourself that there's hope in Nigeria, there's no hope. Let us be sincere. Let us tell ourselves the truth. So I see it, you know, like this Okada thing you're talking about. Okay, one of the most expensive place neighborhood in Africa, you know, like, you know, when people say property in Nigeria, they say property in Nigeria is useless. If you have money, go and put it overseas and get better returns. And yes. You know, understand what I mean? One of the most expensive neighborhoods in Africa. The most expensive, let me even just call, I won't just call the name, but all of you will know, is in Nigeria, the neighborhood, and is in Lagos. You see Okada and people pushing, you know that thing when you're growing up, you see somebody pushing a truck and knocking wood by selling bottles. You see everybody everywhere. So what are you paying money to buy those properties for? And you have a government that say they want to turn it to a mega city. When you talk, they will tell you go back to your state. And I keep telling people, okay, go back to your state. Even the people ruling you are not even from the state. Even the people, except you want to say, okay, you want to use, okay, language, okay, these are people from this particular place. You see...
Even with that, you are not sure of some people's origins.
Yeah. So the issue of small little low hanging fruits, they cannot do it because of some people want to become president of a country. So he doesn't want to see that, oh, he's pushing somebody, he's pushing people from this part of one part of the country to another part of the country. Even in some states, they have banned Okada, even in some places in the north, in some metropolis, they don't come.
In Kano, yes.
They have banned this thing. Don't come around there. So I don't know how a state like Lagos, which everybody keeps saying brandishing is the fifth largest economy, kinikon, how that state cannot have a good, what's his name, transport system up to this very moment.
Okay, before we go, because we'll soon pack up, the takers are, Teke One is already in the premises. This story came up. I'm going to call my good friend next week. I'm agreed to come on his behalf. I haven't spoken, I'm not afraid to call him, but I've agreed on his behalf, Captain Jaja, that he will come on Tuesday. He's my own encyclopedia on aviation. But he says that Nigeria is going to have a Nigerian air with 49% foreign ownership. First of all, why 49? Why not 51? Shebi is the brand that you need. You say you want to have your national carrier. You don't have to own a national carrier. You can make Airpeace, for example, a national carrier. You could have made Arik a national carrier. Because this is, look, Osa, last week, I don't know if you heard, they appointed 20 judges. Four are children of seven judges. One is a sibling. Those are the ones whose names are glaring. I'm sure out of that 20, maybe only two or three will be on merit only.
In Lagos, majority of the magistrates are daughters
and sons,
past or present. Yes. They can't hide it. It's everywhere in Nigeria now. They just bring, one of them was to study law. Mama is a lawyer. She became a judge, magistrate. She rose through the rank and became a judge. This thing is enjoyment. So let it turn to traditional family tradition. Then you drag your daughter or son and you push him there.
So we are not business minded.
Yes, really. Now so they are all over. So it's a continuation. So and you know when you are in the bench and you are pushing your children. So when there's any promotion from magistrate 1 to 2, they push from magistrate 3 to 3 to chief. So it's a part. So that part will come in 10 years. So people like could just
the airline whatever is very sensitive.
These are just policies coming and the man wants to go for governor. So these are just where to collect money and go and just go and do it. There's nothing that will happen here. Is it not the same Nigerian Air or Air Nigeria or Nigerian Air or Air or any whatever that the guy went to Farnborough in UK and unveiled a logo and came back and presented the logo and quote to the president and
FM Executive Council
after many years. And they have been budgeting money on this same project from branding and co year in, year out. You see the budget now. They budget this every day in the ministry. Nigerian Airways. What do you need Nigerian Air for? All you need to do is to give the local ones the support that they need.
Exactly.
Privatize your airports. Make it functional.
Yes.
To attract them. Who are the major countries in the world? Do they think that Air France is owned by the French government? They are run as a private entity now.
You know this issue of airports that you said. Sometimes when you want to book your flight, book a trip somewhere, and you have to do some connection, the airport could be the determining factor.
Yes, now.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yes, you can say, okay, let me take KLM because I want to stop at Schiphol.
So that you can have that feeling. So even if you're there for like 3 hours or 4 hours layover, 5 hours layover, by the time you move from here to here, there's even a hotel inside that you can have a quick nap. Two, 3 hours. In Heathrow, they have it now.
And talking about privatization, do you know that Gatwick is owned by a Nigerian?
I heard.
Ogunlesi. He runs Gatwick.
I think they are planning to do some privatization stuff on at least about 4 airports in Nigeria, the 4 international airports. That's what I heard. They were looking at people that have run similar things across the world to come back.
But I don't know what is happening with the arrangement they have with Babalakin, for example.
That one is a local domestic airport.
It keeps flipping and flopping. Government is so difficult to do business.
Because the problem with Nigerian government is this. You know, there are certain areas when the government is involved that even if another government come in, that
the dynamics change.
You have to honor those things. But in Nigeria, it's different. So why would you carry your money and come to the land that when another person comes, you have to say, Mr. Jimmy, the one that put these people here, that means this man is making returns to Jimmy by proxy. No, cancel that contract.
I want it.
We should go and bring our person. That's how we work in Nigeria now. We said everything is not transparent.
Can I take a call, please? Hello, morning.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, sir. Who's calling?
Yeah, good morning. My name is David. And I just want to quickly comment on that, the national carrier thing. To be honest, I don't think it is a well-thought idea. Because government has tried to run an airline and they failed woefully in the past. But if they say they want to do it, my only concern is the 5% government stake.
Okay.
In the idea. So it is 5% government, a certain percentage of local investors, local private investors, and then foreign investors. You see, that 5% of government is enough to bully every other person.
Yes.
Into and whip them into line. So that's the only challenge I have with it. And for our airport, I really wish and pray that they can just put Ogunlesi in a room and beg him to come and run at least Lagos and Abuja Airport. The man runs three airports in London, Gatwick, London City, and I think Stansted.
Oh, does he run like London City now?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
He's doing a fantastic job.
Yes.
And guess what? The guy is an investment banker.
Wow.
He's an investment banker. He has absolutely nothing aviation related. But it's like I always say, sometimes you don't need to, like, you want to run a hospital. A doctor doesn't have to run a hospital.
Mm.
Just get a good administrator. In our country, what we need for a lot of our institutions is just a proper administrator who is ready to damn the odds. Thank you.
I didn't know that Ogunlesi runs London City. It's my favorite, it's my airport of choice, London City. Wow. So he runs free. But he won't come here.
Come here to come and do what? Can't he, this is where you get that attack.
You reckon?
Yes, I pass away from here now, in Nigeria.
And then, I think, can I just see his profile quickly? I'd like to even know if he's English. If he's a UK citizen. He might not necessarily
have been a UK citizen by now.
You reckon? Sorry? Ogunlesi.
The guy who is by now a UK citizen.
No, he might have right of abode. He might not.
I will have taken that in.
Right, no, what I just want to show, I just want to highlight is the flexibility with which, you understand what I'm saying? Here, all kinds of things will come into condition. You cannot give him three airports. He's from the north.
We need
for security reasons. We need to give another
person. The same way they sold Nine Mobile. After we have one that one man, Nigerian man, is owing from the south, why don't we have one our own? That's how Nine Mobile was. So look at Nine Mobile collapsing there.
I take that back on your behalf. I do apologize. I don't know if it's collapsing or not. But also, let's be careful here. One of the things we spoke about this morning, in which you sent a correction, is this problem with this gentleman, the Oluwaviwo, and his traditionalists. I wonder, have you been following the story? And I wonder what your feelings are.
You see, I agree with you when you take a traditional title. It's called a traditional title.
Yes.
It's like you say you want to become an imam or a pope or
a pastor.
So if you don't believe in the doctrine of the church, appointed, because the church will have their rules, they have their doctrine, they have their rules. So if you don't believe in it, then you say, I don't want to take this, you know, I resign, and it's in conflict with my destiny. So if you want to become a traditional ruler, and there are certain rights and this is for you to become traditional ruler, then you better go and take it. So if you don't want to be, you can declare. After all, a certain prince in over 100 days, close to 100 days ago, declined the throne in the UK and said he wants to follow his heart. So you understand me now? So same thing has happened in Japan, when, you know, the princess said she's going to abandon her royalty because she wants to marry a commoner. And she's following her. So you have to choose. So you
I wonder if that would ever happen in a place like Benin. They're highly traditional. For the crown prince to say he doesn't want the throne.
No, he must want the throne. No.
They would have made. I think that if we follow our own traditions to the letter, you won't have this kind of embarrassment. I'm a small boy. I don't know anything. But I am told that the reason why Abu Jale has been so successful is that he was really and truly chosen by Ifa, and that they had to practically drag him home as a young man to come and ascend the throne. the moment you deviate, like you said, a crown prince in Benin will always want it. Because from the day he is born, you understand, everything traditionally possible, it will be done to make sure that he doesn't derail. Isn't that how it works?
Yes, you know, it's already, you know, I think, you know, culture, it depends on your, I think it depends on the place that you're from. And, you know, some people who...
Yeah, from Benin.
Yes,
right?
So people hold that culture thing very, very well. So no matter how civilization, no matter how, so they want to stay with the culture. So yes. they would like to stay, they want to keep that cultural heritage. You know, it's like, you know, the division, I think, is mostly in the southern part of Nigeria. The northern part, you know, they still hold their culture. They still hold their traditions. They still keep...
This is a Yoruba problem, but you're virtually a Yoruba man anyway. And I wonder how you see tradition being treated in this part, in the southwest, traditional rulers and so on and so forth. Do you see any red flag in the air?
You know, the difference here is that, you know, they have ruling houses.
Yes.
And in ruling houses, they'll say, this person has ruled before, this house has ruled.
Is this one strong?
Is this next three people? That's one of them that can be. Maybe they go and choose among themselves, bring their candidate. Then if I go and check, or the kingmakers will now look at this, I say, okay, they want to give house ruling house.
But it's been compromised.
And so now it has become a political thing. Now. So whether you are... you have to go and meet your godfather somewhere. You will now talk to another godfather to talk to this. So they will now put you, when your name comes to the bar in this thing, the governor will tell you that, you see, this is the person that we want.
Yeah.
So the kingmakers will just come and just do affirmation. This is the person that government wants. They just become those things. So
it's sad though, because if you look all over the world, those who have been able to like match the Western world one for one, have stuck to their traditions, and it has helped them.
You see, it's only in. I don't know. I'm sure if I'm right. I think it's only in Benin that it is like you say. Like you usually say, it's a sure banker.
You don't
even need the governor or anybody to say, oh,
they
brought me three lists. I want to choose one.
No.
The governor, anybody, whether military or civilian, they fall in line. So once it's happened, because let me tell you, the leopard, like we call our now, where they will say he has taken a journey into the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The man maybe have been dead like 1 year.
Yeah.
So they'll tell you he's not receiving visitors. He has passed away. So the traditional rite has started. Yes. Then when they get to the time, they want to do the burial. You see, like Oba Benin now, you can never see them. You can never see the coffin. You can never see anything. You know, when he died, he's buried inside the palace.
Wow.
So you can. Did you see anybody carrying a coffin anyway? Did you see any images?
Yes, no.
You can't see those images now. The same thing happened when they took the Oba Vorame to Calabar somewhere. You know, the British people. You know, when he was killed over there. You know, they buried him over there.
Yes.
Then people went from here, from Benin to Calabar, to go and look for his grave and bring his head back to the Benin and put it. Because the king cannot be buried outside the territory. So you can see, there's no ceremony. Oh, Oba is dead, let's go and do burial ceremony. That thing is quietly buried. They buried him, do the rite, and come. Then the son takes over, do the traditional rite, do the walking, then come to the palace again
the
and
king
stay inside.
Is dead, so, long live the king.
So you have, so the governor doesn't just come and you only just to hand over because of the local government and
everything. Yes,
take this thing. So it's just a follow. But yeah, the kingmakers meet, they will not
and have been conference.
So that's
how we gotta go.
Hmm.
1 hour is so short. You'll be back again now.
No problem, sir.
Should we do this next week?
I'm available. I'm five minutes away.
I know you're 5 minutes away now. Are you enjoying your new I will join you, inshallah. I want to be, when I grow up, I want to be like Osa. Today's program was dedicated to the memory of my very good friend, Tony Oranta, who has passed away. I'm hoping that one day I'll be able to tell you the full story of that fighter. He was fought and fought and fought. Last time I saw him, he said, Jimmy, I go knock this thing, man. I said, yeah. You know, he had about 3 strokes then. He kept fighting and fighting. That's what we learned for today. Thank you very much, Osa Owani. Thank you very much, Wemimo. I'd like to thank Amsterdam Malta, you know, for providing us this opportunity. You know, without this opportunity, I'm not going to talk. Before I open my mouth, something was entering me. And to tell you ahead of time, Christmas is round the corner. I'm a Hong Kong. So you want to keep keep to this station and keep to this program. At the appropriate time, some of you will go home with certain things. Osa, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll be back again tomorrow, same time, 9 o'clock. The tickets will come in any minute from now. Ticket 2 is in the compound. Ticket 1 will be running through the gate at the time I'm driving out. I'll see you all tomorrow at 9.
Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.